KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Longtime activist Winona LaDuke says powerful corporations and the Trump administration are trying to eliminate dissent and disrupt Native American interests. As Brian Bull reports, she visited the University of Oregon Monday, fresh from observing the start of a trial against Greenpeace.
LaDuke, an Anishinaabe tribal member from Minnesota's White Earth Reservation, says the powerful energy transfer corporation has taken Greenpeace to a district court trial for multiple reasons.
To diminish and squash any kind of civil disobedience or First Amendment rights by criminalizing criticism of big energy corporations because they're charging Greenpeace with defamation. It's called a slap suit. Strategic litigation against public participation.
LaDuke adds the case will be determined by jury in North Dakota's Morton County, which she accuses of being racist and biased towards energy development companies. It's all part of a larger concern Native environmentalists have as President Trump continues to slash federal agencies and revisit his environmental agenda. In his first term, Trump cut protections on certain areas deemed sacred or important to tribes.
Widespread mayhem is what we're seeing. I mean, and obviously things like bear's ears, everything that we have had gains on to protect sacred sites, they're going to try to roll them back, as well as just basically destabilize tribal governments and tribal communities by cuts in funding.
LaDuke says it's important for Native people to work together and protect their sovereignty, as well as food, water, and families.
Hold on. You know, this is not our first bad rodeo.
In a web statement, Energy Transfer says its lawsuit against Greenpeace is not about free speech, but activists not following the law. And the White House has explained that its actions are about eliminating waste at the federal level. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
Ahead of President Trump's address to Congress Tuesday night, a leader in urban Indian health, Linda Sunstone, is advocating for urban clinics. The CEO of First Nations Health Source will be attending the speech in Washington as a guest of Representative Melanie Stansbury of New Mexico. First Nations in Albuquerque is one of 41 urban Indian clinics in the country, which Sunstone says is an important part of the Indian Health Service system. She's advocating for the protection of IHS funding and Medicaid, and is also concerned about federal workforce reductions.
We rely heavily on having a strong IHS infrastructure to administer and oversee a lot of the funding that we receive, as well as to advocate for both the tribes and the urban communities.
The clinic provides medical, dental, and behavioral health services and traditional healing. Another effort to create Indigenous Peoples Day in Montana is underway in the state legislature. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Trexler has more.
Missoula Democratic Senator Shane Morjo brought a bill that would recognize the holiday statewide by sharing Columbus Day. This is the sixth legislative session in a row raising the issue. In 2021 and 2023, legislators attempted to replace Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day, but this year Morjo's bill proposes the two coincide. Here's Morjo, who's a member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes.
For all the organizers and people that I've worked with across the state, I think for them this was the best step moving forward, recognizing that other efforts we've brought to the legislative body have not passed.
Legislators who spoke in support of the bill said it struck a balance and recognized Columbus's impacts on world history as well as Indigenous peoples' impacts. The Senate gave the bill an initial vote of endorsement 48-2. In Missoula, I'm Victoria Traxler.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at AARP.org.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
They should have helped us when we needed help in the beginning, not wait 20 years. Those city people, they wouldn't wait 20 years to get help. They would do it right now.
Crumbling rural school buildings in Alaska put children at risk. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, March 4th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Senator Murkowski's defense of Ukraine earns her some praise from Republican colleagues, but not publicly.
I've gotten a couple attagirls.
From Republicans?
From Republicans and from some Democrats.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Talk one-on-one with experts on mental health, nutrition, pharmacology, surgery, childcare, and much more on Line One, your health connection. Join our hosts as they discuss the health topics that matter to Alaskans with their guests and live callers. Email questions before, during, or after the live broadcast to lineone@alaskapublic.org. That's Line One, your health connection, weekly on your local public radio station.
As President Trump delivered his address to a joint session of Congress tonight, many lawmakers wore blue to show solidarity with Ukraine. Alaska U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski was among them. She was one of the few Republicans to criticize the treatment Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky got at the White House on Friday. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin asked her about it.
Murkowski's rebuke was probably the harshest of any Republican in Congress. She issued a statement the next day saying it made her sick to her stomach to see the White House apparently desert an ally and embrace Russian President Vladimir Putin, who she called a threat to democracy. Still, Murkowski says none of her colleagues called her out for it.
If they don't like it, they haven't mentioned it to me.
In public, Republican senators have not backed her up, but she says she has heard praise.
I've gotten a couple attagirls.
Yeah, from Republicans?
From Republicans and from some Democrats.
Senator Dan Sullivan regularly speaks of the necessity to stand by America's allies to keep authoritarian aggression in check. And he often criticized Presidents Obama and Biden for not doing enough to help Ukraine defend itself. But after the Oval Office event Friday, Sullivan issued no statement critical of Trump's apparent alignment with Putin on how to end the war with Ukraine. His office declined an interview request this week. In a Senate hallway, Sullivan didn't pause for a question and got into a senator's only elevator.
May I join you?
No, sorry.
Alaska Congressman Nick Begich's office scheduled an interview for this week but canceled it. Reporting from the U.S. Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
As part of ProPublica's local reporting network, KYUK senior reporter Emily Schwing spent the last year crawling through attics, basements, gear closets, and classrooms in rural public schools across the state. She found chemical leaks, standing raw sewage, extensive black mold, exposed electrical wiring, and malfunctioning fire alarms. All things that pose serious public health and safety risks that students, teachers, and staff face every day. Here is the report.
Every morning before kids in Sleep Mute head to class, Angela Hayden leads them in the Pledge of Allegiance. For Hayden, this is a normal part of the day. But so is working inside a building that's falling down around her.
The roof was leaking when I first started teaching here 17 years ago.
Hayden is the lead teacher and principal in Sleep Mute, where there are no roads or shopping malls and internet and phone service are spotty. Fewer than 100 people live here.
I figured coming to a remote place in Alaska, I'm probably going to be more than just a teacher. And that's proven to be true. Mm-hmm. You have to have a lot of knowledge of so many different things just to survive and live out here.
Building maintenance is one of those things. Teachers and staff have been trying to prop up the sagging roof in Sleep Mute School for years. According to the state fire marshal, there's no mechanism to condemn a building in Alaska, but that's exactly what an architect recommended here in 2021. There's a very real risk that the back portion of Sleep Mute School could collapse. So the school district closed the wood shop, the boys' bathroom next door, and the gym down the hall. Now, 25 students and staff share a single bathroom, and they're confined to three classrooms and a main atrium, lined with portraits of the community's Yupik and Athabascan elders. But even here, they can't escape a host of public health and safety risks. Cherie Smith has been teaching in Sleep Mute for over 12 years. Last fall, a bat flew into her classroom.
And then we went to get a tennis racket out of the gym, and it came out into the hallway, and I smacked it down with a tennis racket, and I killed it.
Smith told me a whole bunch of bats live above the gym. So I put on a mask and climbed a ladder up to a little closet that holds a loud hot water heater.
You can see there's some sort of animal waste all over the floor. It looks like somebody's been like kind of living in the insulation in the ceiling. And then way in the back, you can see that the ceiling is moldy.
Madeline Aguillard is the superintendent of the Cuspuck School District, which includes Sleep Mute. She says it's unrealistic for school districts and the state to expect kids to learn in these conditions.
They're not conducive for high expectations. They're not conducive for academic achievement. They're not conducive for athletic, achievement.
These building conditions also pose real health risks. Long-term exposure to black mold can irritate lungs, exacerbate respiratory conditions, and cause chronic fatigue, skin rashes, and neurological problems. Airborne fungal spores from bat feces also irritate lungs and can cause blindness. Andrea John has three kids enrolled at the Sleep Mute School. Sometimes, she says, they come home sick.
Like my older son, he complains about headaches.
How often?
Not as much as before, but he did. Like last year or year before, he was complaining about headaches pretty much every day.
Okay.
So it could be, from the mold or whatever.
Federal agencies and healthcare providers have long documented higher rates of health disparities among Alaska Natives compared to the general population. And most of the students in the state's rural school districts are Indigenous. But there's virtually no public data available to explain the potential health consequences for kids, teachers, and staff who spend their days inside these buildings. Alaska's public health department and regional healthcare providers cited privacy concerns when they declined to provide information about some of the illnesses documented in Alaska's rural villages. Even if data were available, it would be complicated by known sanitation and housing challenges in some remote communities. John says she knows the school isn't safe, but she's not willing to keep her kids from their education.
Even though we have concerns for our kids, we got no choice. And we value the education. We need education to do things in life.
Alaska's rural school districts rely almost entirely on the state for funding. The communities they serve don't have local governments that can levy taxes to help pay for schools. And in Sleep Mute, the State Department of Education owns the building. State law says the agency is responsible for major construction projects. Alaska Education Commissioner Dina Bishop acknowledges a public health concern, but says her agency isn't solely responsible for fixing the problem.
And if something's happening in the school, it's most likely happening in other buildings in the community. So, it is a collective Alaskan issue that we'd be happy to have a seat at the table to discuss.
Bishop says some problems in rural schools have been left unchecked for years.
Probably from the moment that those buildings were built, the investments haven't kept up with the wear and tear on those facilities. So certainly as they are, reported and go through the process, we do work to take care of those and mitigate any kind of, dangerous conditions, things like that.
The school district has asked the state for money to help fix the roof in Sleep Mute 19 times. Architectural and engineering reports submitted with those applications highlight the public health and safety risks to anyone who uses the school. It's unclear why Sleepmute's roof was left to leak for nearly two decades. But Andrea John says she thinks it's because it's easy for the state to forget communities like hers.
They're choosing to look the other way instead of house us.
Last summer, the legislature finally did sign off on funding for a new roof in Sleepmute. But it's not enough money to address other problems that have resulted from the decades of leaking. John says the solution has simply been out of reach for too long.
They should have helped us when we needed help in the beginning, not wait 20 years. Those city people, they wouldn't wait 20 years to get help. They would do it right now. Now. Right this minute, instead of dragging it on forever and ever and ages. They wouldn't let their kids go to school here.
In Sleepmute, I'm Emily Schwing.
Support for this reporting comes from ProPublica and the USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism's 2024 National Fellowship. It's fund for reporting on child well-being and the Dennis A. Hunt Fund for Health Journalism. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Iditarod Musher say this year's field is so small because the sport has gotten so expensive.
Mushing's expensive, you know? It's amazing that there's 33 of us that can afford to be here.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Kodiak Aleutians Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will meet to develop federal wildlife proposals and discuss other subsistence-related issues. The public is invited to participate in the meeting March 6th and 7th in Kodiak. More information at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy on Friday proposed a constitutional amendment that would give future governors more latitude when picking judges for the Alaska court system. The Alaska Beacon reports that if adopted by the legislature, the amendment would be subject to a statewide vote in 2026. If adopted by voters, it would take effect after Dunleavy leaves office. The draft amendment would reduce the role of the nonpartisan Alaska Judicial Council in the judge-picking process. The council considers applications and picks the most qualified people for a short list of nominees. If there's a tie on a particular nominee, the Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court casts the tie-breaking vote. The list of finalists is sent to the governor, who makes the final selection. If the governor's constitutional amendment were adopted, the council would no longer be able to pick a short list of finalists based on their merit. Instead, the council would be required to forward every applicant as long as they met the state constitution's minimum requirements. Dunleavy has previously expressed frustration with the judicial selection process. In 2019, after expressing unhappiness with his options for a Palmer Superior Court vacancy, he did not follow state law, violating the timeline to fill the vacancy. The governor ultimately made a pick, but his violation served as one of three grounds for the unsuccessful campaign to recall him from office. Well, former Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola and her former chief of staff have new jobs. They're both working for Holland & Hart, a law and lobbying firm. Peltola is now the senior director of Alaska Affairs, based at the firm's Anchorage office. Her former top aide in Congress, Anton McParland, is the senior director of federal affairs. The firm said in an emailed announcement that McParland will be working out of the Holland & Hart offices in Anchorage and Washington, D.C. Anchorage attorney John Katchen is a partner at the firm. He called Peltola and McParland, quote, high-caliber influencers and government affairs professionals. Former members of the U.S. House are prohibited from lobbying Congress for at least a year, but they can still advise clients. Senior staffers are restricted from lobbying their former colleagues for a year. Ketchikan is joining Sitka, Juneau, and Skagway in repealing a sales tax exemption for cruise ships. Ketchikan City and borough governments recently passed laws to start collecting sales tax on goods and services purchased aboard cruise ships while they're docked in the first city. KRBD's Jack Darrell has more.
Ketchikan Borough recently met to discuss if cruise ships should pay sales tax. Currently, the dozens of cruise ships that dock in Ketchikan every year, they're carrying millions of passengers, are exempt from paying sales tax in their onboard shops and restaurants. In other words, the local governments have allowed the floating cities to bring goods and services into the area and sell them on board without giving them a slice. And borough attorney Glenn Brown says it's been a burr under the saddle for local businesses.
A longstanding inequity for local brick-and-mortar businesses that sell similar items to what is sold aboard the vessel, where you have essentially one operating tax-free and one not.
Brown says this borough ordinance would repeal that exemption. Like, it would subject the cruisers to the same sales tax as everyone else.
This is drafted so when they're in the territorial waters of the borough, it's taxable sales aboard the vessel.
Another assembly member brought up the question of compliance. Like, how do you enforce that and make sure a cruise ship is actually following the rules? Brown says, basically, you audit them. But even then, Brown says there are other ways a cruise ship could skirt paying the tax.
There was some anecdotal evidence from Juneau that some of the cruise lines, in response to the removal of the exemption, closed their stores, closed their restaurants aboard the vessel. So it's really hard to tell what the market will do in response to the removal of this. There may be some sales that no longer occur.
Assemblymember Jamie Palmer owns a small business in town. She says that if cruisers can't spend money at the onboard store and have to buy local, even better.
I just want to let everyone know we've already been called idiots online for considering this. There was an article today I saw that said we were really dumb to do this and it's going to make all the ships bypass us, which clearly it's not, because the other communities north have been doing it for a while. And I fully support this and think it's about time. And if there's other exemptions like this out there, then I hope that we find them and remove them also.
Assemblymember Charlie Arnson says that the onboard tax levels the playing field for local businesses serving tourists. The ordinance passed the borough assembly 6-1. And the vote comes just 4 days after the Ketchikan City Council approved their ordinance to repeal the same exception. City Manager Delilah Walsh said in a letter that the whole thing was born out of a couple council members saying that Ketchikan needs to maximize visitor revenue to help pad the city's hurting wallet. The ordinance passed through the city council with almost no debate. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
With many new requirements from the Trump administration, it's an uncertain time for immigrants. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, the new Philippine Honorary Consul for Alaska hopes she can be of service.
Evelyn Abello is known as Auntie Evelyn in the Filipino community in Anchorage, where she's made her home for more than 40 years. Earlier this month, she made a trip to San Francisco to the Philippine General Consulate to train for what is mostly a voluntary position. Now, she's ready to serve the whole state of Alaska.
It's kind of like a challenging time to be in this position, but I take things in stride and kind of like deal with issues in the moment.
Abello has worked as a teacher, counselor, and as an investigator for the Alaska Human Rights Commission. She says it's experience that has been good preparation for this new role. She says there will be times she'll be called upon to help Filipinos in distress, but the job mostly involves a lot of clerical work, like helping people with travel documents such as lost passports. Beyond this, Abello hopes to raise the profile of Filipinos in Alaska, who are the state's largest immigrant group. More than 35,000 live here and make up almost 5% of the state's population.
We are a diverse group, and so we have over 400 dialects in the Philippines that creates sometimes a barrier. Fortunately, Tagalog became the national language.
Abello says it's hard for Filipinos who don't speak Tagalog to navigate immigration paperwork, especially the elders. She says it might seem odd, but Filipinos who speak different dialects often use broken English to communicate with each other. She says Filipinos originally came to Alaska to work in fisheries and mining, but today you'll find them in government services, home care businesses, and increasingly in education, where teachers from the Philippines have been recruited to ease staffing shortages at schools in rural Alaska. And there is another aspect of the job Abellio hopes to cultivate, trade and tourism between Alaska and the Philippines.
One of the products that was kind of exciting for me is cacao, because we have a lot of that in the Philippines.
Abellio says Filipino chocolate is one of many trade and investment opportunities she'd like to promote. Abellio will serve a 3-year term as honorary consul and replaces Rebecca Carrillo of Juneau. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, providing telecommunication services to tribal health organizations and nonprofit rural health providers, enabling telehealth services for Alaskans. More at gci.com/healthcare. Did you know 100 years ago, the chances of a baby dying in Alaska before their first birthday was almost 10%? Because of advances in public health like sanitation, access to clean water, vaccines for children, and access to healthcare in rural communities, the chances of dying are now less than 1%. To learn more about what the Alaska Department of Health is doing to improve Alaskans' health for the next 100 years, visit health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Mining leaders had an optimistic outlook at the third annual Juneau Mining Forum last week. They say the next 4 years of Trump administration policy could mark a turning point for the acceleration of resource development in Alaska. It's an opportunity that Hecla Greens Creek Mine on Admiralty Island plans to take full advantage of, says Mike Satry, Hecla's Director of Government Affairs.
There's great opportunity for our industry right now. There's great opportunity here in Alaska. We have the resources that the nation and that the world needs. We have the opportunity with this administration to hopefully move a bunch of projects forward.
Satry was a panelist for a federal issues discussion that considered how the new administration could change the U.S. mining industry's permitting process to streamline development. In his first day in office, Trump issued executive orders that called for more drilling, logging, and mining in Alaska. An order called Unleashing Alaska's Extraordinary Resource Potential aims to undo most of the Biden administration's work to limit resource development in the state. Greens Creek is the largest silver mine in the nation and pays the most property tax in Juneau. Last year, the U.S. Forest Service permitted a project for the mine to expand storage for its tailings. That's the rock left over after digging for metals. It was a 5-year process, but its approval means the mine could live on for up to another 18 years. Jerry Mullins with the National Mining Association said the prolonged permitting process is one of the industry's biggest barriers, and it's a part of the reason the U.S. is in a losing battle for mineral dominance against countries like China. He said that poses a risk to national security.
The permitting process itself is self-explanatory. It doesn't incentivize mining, it disincentivizes mining. You know, every day we see examples of just how important mineral production is, and every day we see examples of why it's so difficult to gain that mineral production.
He says he's hopeful that the new administration will find ways to expedite the process and increase opportunities for projects in the state. There are just 33 Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race teams mushing to Nome right now, tying the record for the smallest field ever. As Alaska Public Media's Ava White reports, mushers all point to one big challenge.
Ask this year's Iditarod mushers why there are so few teams, and you'll hear the same thing over and over.
I think the cost is really, really tough.
Not everybody has the time to dedicate to Iditarod or the money.
Mushing's expensive, you know? It's amazing that there's 33 of us that can afford to be here.
It's very economic-based. I cannot nearly cover the cost of this race unless you win it.
It adds up quickly. You know, it just gets really spendy.
Yep, sled dog racing is expensive. You heard it from veteran mushers Ryan Reddington, Travis Beals, Jesse Holmes, Gabe Dunham, and Matthew Fahler. They're part of this year's 33 mushers racing over 1,000 miles to Nome. The number of teams is tied with the record low set in 2023. It's a fraction of the record high of 96 teams in 2008, and it's even fewer teams than competed in the very first Iditarod back in 1973. Matthew Fahler has competed in every Iditarod since 2012, a year with double the number of mushers as today. He says there's a long list of expenses involved in sled dog racing.
Straw is a big expense. You know, you usually have a bale per dog. Dog booties. Each dog booty is $1.15 a piece or $1.10 a piece, depending on where you go. And we use hundreds per week, maybe thousands.
The laundry list of expenses keeps on going. There's veterinary care, dog food, equipment, fuel, and a $4,000 Iditarod registration fee. At the same time, veteran Gabe Dunham says sponsors have become harder to get.
In the 90s, it seemed like they were relatively lucrative. And now you can go to all these places and you know, they might give you a couple $100, which is super beneficial. Every dollar counts. But it's not the big money that it used to be or the big corporate sponsors.
The Iditarod Race Organization has felt the strain, too, losing big-name sponsors in recent years, like Alaska Airlines, Coca-Cola, and ExxonMobil. Iditarod's race director, Mark Nordman, also notes that a group of longtime racers have recently retired from the sport, like four-time champion Martin Boozer and fan favorite Ali Zirkel. But he also thinks finances are a barrier and says race officials are working to raise the amount of money teams win.
It just keeps getting more and more expensive for people to own a dog team. It's very expensive. You know, we as an organization are always saying we have to raise the purse so they can continue to go forward with their passion.
Among the mushers noticeably absent are reigning six-time champion Dallas Seavey, 2019 champion Pete Kaiser, and 2018 champion Your Life Seth Olsom, as well as frequent top contenders like Jesse Royer and Richie Deal. In a video posted to his website, Kaiser said poor snow conditions and high temperatures in Bethel led him to not racing the Iditarod for the first time in 15 years. He says he couldn't get the training miles on his team. He considered signing up late, but snow conditions never improved.
Was hoping for some better training conditions and some better weather to come along in December and January, and we really just kept waiting and nothing changed.
Those poor conditions postponed or canceled some sled dog races this year, and it's not motivating for young mushers, says Iditarod's 2023 champion, Ryan Reddington.
It is a sport where if you have a year like this with races being canceled, it is tough to want to keep adding money and keep with it.
But mushers say the small field isn't a sign the sport is dying. There has been growing interest in smaller races across the state, like the Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race that runs between Bethel and Aniak. Also, this year's 16 Iditarod rookies is a promising sign, says veteran Travis Beals.
That's huge. Sport's alive.
One of those rookies is Emily Ford. She says it's not about the number of teams, but more about the support from communities along the trail.
You look around and we have all these fans and like, they're, you know, really they're the ones who breathe life into us as mushers to allow us to do this. Even if there were two mushers going, if there were a million people that showed up, it'd still make Iditarod worth it.
Still, she thinks younger mushers are streaming into the sport and will continue to do so, keeping the Iditarod alive. In Anchorage, I'm Ava White.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Emily Schwing in Sleep Mute, Jack Darrell in Ketchikan, Rhonda McBride and Ava White in Anchorage, and Clarice Larson in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips Alaska. Building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training. ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to Alaska for more than 50 years. Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media. Thank you.
Maybe it's because I'm crazy. Maybe it's because I just can't honestly tell you what I want. It's never enough to stay still and hold you, to break loose and run the taste of you wild on my tongue. Am I no good to you now? Days with doctors and my nights with crooks, and all of them would sell me for a song. So I'm here, safe, dear fiction in your arms. Am I no good to you?
Thank you. looking, I never say a word. I know how niggas start acting trippin'. I heard about that girl. There's no way, now they gon' fight over no day. As you can see, but I like your steez, your style, your whole demeanor. The way you come through and holler and swoop me in his two seats. Now that's gangsta, and I got special ways to thank ya. But don't you forget it, but it ain't that easy for you to back up and leave him. But you and Dirty got ties for different reasons, I respect that. And right before I turned to leave, she said,
you don't know what you mean to me.
You're never alone. I'm here and I
this one day.
Fall if anyone got a look. Every A-list player is a favorite friend.
the same in the back of the band. A congressman would call her every once in a while. Got the schoolgirl skirt on the top of the pile. She's done everyone wants, and everyone knows you gotta get a little dirty when you're digging for gold. Hey. Hey. She ain't no Cinderella when she's getting undressed, cause she rocks it like the naughty wicked witch. Working 3 days a week. Yeah, she'd even break a promise in the promised land. She didn't make it this far by just shaking hands. She'll shake her money, make it twice as hard as anyone can. She didn't make it this far by just shaking hands. Judge's going easy cause he paid for a chest. Yeah, he loves his little naughty wicked witch of the west. Far too pretty to be giving it cheap. That's why she's making six figures working 3 days a week. Yeah, she'd even break a promise in the promised land. She didn't make it this far by just shaking hands. She'll shake her money, make it twice as hard as anyone can. She didn't make it this far by just shaking.
Listening to 8:30 a.m. KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska.
When I lay my head on my pillow at night, the woman I love is holding me tight.
I must believe I'm doing something right. Well, it's one more day living in paradise. I probably ought to say my prayers a little more often than I do. I call myself too busy, and that's really no excuse. But the Lord keeps on forgiving me. I don't know what he's thinking. Every day he blesses me, he reaches out, it keeps me breathing. When I lay my head on my pillow at night, and the woman I love is holding me tight, I must believe I'm doing something right. But it's one more day. To the beach, and I married a girl. Both of us started.